The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Volume 12, featuring these two episodes. Episode 1, A Scandal in Bohemia. Episode 2, The Second Generation. The radio programs appearing in this audiobook were written by Dennis Green, Bruce Taylor, and Anthony Boucher, based upon the characters and suggested by incidents appearing in stories created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in his Sherlock Holmes detective novels, featuring narration by Basil Rathbone as Sherlock and Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson. The radio show's host is Harry Bartell.
Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. Now I know Dr. Watson's waiting for us, so let's go in and join him.
Come in, come in, come in.
Good evening, Dr. Watson.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell. You're quite muffled up tonight, I see. Overcoat, scarf, and gloves. Slip them off and come and join me by the fire.
Thanks, Doctor. Quite a nip in the air tonight.
Yes, there is indeed.
Well, Doctor, you told us last week that tonight's story centered around the activities of a brilliant and beautiful woman.
Yes, my boy. Her name was Irene Adler. But I never knew Holmes to refer to her by any other name than the woman.
She sounds mighty intriguing. How did you happen to meet up with her?
Well, I'll tell you the story from the beginning. One night, it was on the 20th of March, 1888, to be exact, I was returning home from a visit to a patient when my steps led me through Baker Street. Since my marriage, I hadn't seen much of Sherlock Holmes and...
And you couldn't resist stopping by 221B, I'm sure, Doctor.
Of course I couldn't. As I stood outside the well-remembered door, I looked up at the lighted windows and saw the tall, spare figure of my old friend pass twice in dark silhouette against the blind. He was pacing the room swiftly, eagerly, with his head sunk on his chest and his hands clasped behind him. To me, who knew his every mood and habit, his attitude and manner told their own story. He was hot on the scent of some new problem. I rang the bell, and a few moments later, I found myself standing before him.
Marriage suits you, Watson. You look in splendid shape.
Yes, and I'm feeling very well, eh?
And in practice again, I see. You didn't tell me that you'd gone back into harness.
Oh, how do you know?
Elementary, my dear chap. If a gentleman walks into my rooms smelling of iodoform with a black mark of nitrate of silver on his right forefinger and a bulge on the left side of his hat to show where he has secreted his stethoscope, I should be dull indeed if I didn't pronounce him to be an active member of the medical profession.
Same as ever, Holmes. By the way, I'm not interrupting you, am I?
Yes, you are, old fellow, but it's a most welcome interruption.
You're working on a new case?
It looks like it. This letter arrived by the last post today. It's undated and has neither signature nor address. Read it.
Look. They will call upon you tonight at 7:45 a gentleman who desires to consult you upon a matter of the very deepest moment. Your recent services to one of the royal houses of Europe have shown that you are one who may safely be trusted. This account of you we have from all quarters received. Be in your chamber, then, at that hour, and do not take it amiss if your visitor wears a mask. Great Scott, it all sounds very mysterious. What do you imagine it means?
Look carefully at the note, Watson. What do you deduce from it?
Well, let's see. Well, the man who wrote it was presumably well-to-do. Such paper couldn't be bought for under 0.5 crown a packet. And it's peculiarly strong and stiff.
Peculiar. That's the very word. It's not an English paper at all. Hold it up to the light. You notice anything?
Yes. There's a large E with a small G.
Mm-hmm.
And a large G with a small T woven into the texture of the paper.
What does that suggest to you?
The name of the maker, no doubt, or Or perhaps his monogram.
Not at all, my dear fellow. The G, with a small T, stands for Gesellschaft, which is the German for company.
And the EG?
That stands for Igria. It's a German-speaking country in Bohemia, not far from Karlsbad.
So the paper was made in Bohemia?
Undoubtedly. The man who wrote the note is a German.
Well, how do you know that?
Observe the curious construction of the sentence. This account of you we have from all quarters received. A Frenchman or a Russian could not have written that. It's the German who is so discourteous to his verbs.
Oh, there's your current now. I'd better go home.
No, unless you have to.
Well, I could stay. I thought perhaps...
Ah, then, my dear chap, stay by all means. I'm lost without my Boswell, and this promises to be interesting. I told Mrs. Hudson to let the masked visitor come upstairs unannounced. Come in. Good evening, sir.
You received my note?
Yes, indeed. Come in, won't you? Sit down. This is my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson. You may say anything before him that you can say to me. Whom have I the honor to address?
You may address me as Count von Kram.
How do you do, sir?
You must excuse this mask that I wear. The august person who employs me wishes his agent to be unknown to you. And I may confess at once that the title by which I have just called myself is not exactly my own.
I was well aware of that fact, sir.
You see, Mr. Holmes, the matter I'm about to discuss implicates the great house of Ormstein, hereditary kings of Bohemia.
That had not escaped me either, sir. In fact, if you will state your case, I shall be better able to advise you. Your Majesty.
How did you... Yes, I am the king. Why should I attempt to conceal it?
Why, indeed.
I shall remove the mask. There. Mr. Holmes, I have traveled incognito from Prague for the express purpose of consulting you.
Then pray consult.
Briefly, the facts are these. Some 5 years ago, during a visit to Warsaw, I meet the acquaintance of the well-known adventuress, Irene Adler.
Irene Adler? We know of her, Your Majesty.
Now look her up in the index for me, will you, Watson? It's right beside you on the desk there.
I imagine that the name would not be unfamiliar to you.
Here we are. A. Abrahams, Acton Green, Hatchet Murders. Adler.
Splendid. Hand me the file, old chap. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Irene Adler. Born in New Jersey in the United States of America in 1858. Contralto. Mm-hmm. Prima Donna, Imperial Opera of Warsaw. Oh. Retired from our operatic stage. Living in London. Quite so. And here's a recent notation. Uh-huh. Your Majesty, as I understand, became entangled with this young person. Wrote her some compromising letters and is now desirous of getting those letters back.
Precisely so, but how...
Was there a secret marriage?
None.
No legal papers or... Or certificates?
No.
Then I fail to follow, Your Majesty. If this young lady should produce her letters for blackmailing purposes, how is she to prove their authenticity?
But there's the handwriting.
That could be a forgery, Your Majesty.
But it was private note paper.
Stolen.
My own seal.
Imitated.
My photograph.
Bought.
What? We were both in the photograph.
Oh, dear me. Yes, that's very bad. Your Majesty has indeed committed an indiscretion.
Did you inscribe this photograph, Your Majesty?
Yes, Dr. Watson, I am afraid I did.
Good gracious,
Mr. Holmes, it must be recovered.
Perhaps if you were to pay enough, the photograph might be bought.
She refuses to sell.
Stolen, then.
5 attempts have been made. 2 burglars in my pay ransacked our house. Once we diverted her luggage when she traveled. 2 she has been waylaid. There has been no result.
Oh, yes, quite a pretty little problem.
It is a deadly serious one to me.
Your Majesty, what does Miss Adler intend to do with the photograph?
To ruin me.
Now, how, sir?
Well, I am about to be married to the second daughter of the King of Scandinavia. She is the soul of delicacy. A shadow of a doubt as to my conduct would bring the matter to an end.
And Irene Adler threatens to send the photograph to your fiancé, I suppose.
Yes, and she will do it. Rather than let me marry another woman, there are no lengths to which she would not go. None. Are
you sure that she hasn't already sent it, Your Majesty?
I am sure.
And why?
She said she would send it on the day my betrothal is publicly announced. That day will be next Monday.
Splendid. Then we still have 3 days.
Your Majesty will, of course, stay in London for the present?
Yes, certainly. You will find me at the Langham Hotel, registered as Sir Count von Kram.
Just 2 questions before you leave.
What are they?
Is the photograph large or small?
Quite large. And it was in a heavy frame.
I see. And what is Irene Adler's London address, please?
Briony Lodge, Serpentine Avenue, St. John's Wood.
Thank you, Your Majesty. Good night, and I trust that we shall soon have some good news for you.
I'm placing all my hopes in you, Mr. Holmes. Good night. Good night, Dr. Morrison.
Good night, Your Majesty. Fascinating problem, Holmes. I wish I could help you with it.
You can, my dear chap. I shall be glad of your company.
That's our first move, Holmes.
A good night's rest. We'll meet here at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
And then?
Then, my dear fellow, we will see what we can find out about Miss Irene Adler, late of the Warsaw Imperial Opera Company, and at present residing at Briony Lodge, Serpentine Avenue, St. John's Wood.
A cursory examination of Brownlee Lodge didn't prove very illuminating.
No, a bijou residence that represents the essence of dignified suburbia. But tells us very little about the owner. I think a visit to the local public house might prove more instructive. Come on, old chap. I see the door of the Coach and Horses inviting us from across the road.
Well, our disguises shouldn't cause any suspicion.
No? I suggested them. In the character of a couple of stable. I felt that we might inspire confidence. This is a horsey neighborhood. And there's a wonderful sympathy and Freemasonry among that fraternity. There we are. Better let me do most of the talking.
Yes, I will. I'm sure that your accent will be more convincing than mine.
Let's go in, shall we?
Worry me, mateys.
Oh, for Voldemort, please. How about you, Charlie?
All of the same.
Two off of old and mild. Here we are, mateys. That'll be a tenner.
Have a drink with us, Governor?
Well, don't mind if I do. Oliver Guinness. You blokes new around here?
Oh, yes. We have just come over from Clapham.
Clapham, eh? Well, he's looking at you. You hunting for job?
Yes, that's right. Well, we was told that Miss Adler, of course, at Briony Lodge, needed a new coachman and groom.
Well, the first I've heard of it, but it might be true. Have you been over there to ask?
No, not yet. We thought we'd find out something about the old girl first.
She ain't no old girl, matey. She's the prettiest young thing you ever saw under a bonnet, and that's a fact.
You know her, Governor?
Yeah, of course I know her. Used to drive a carriage, I did, before I come to work here.
Oh, what's she like?
Well, nice little lady as you'll find, chum.
Workyard?
No. She lives quiet like. Goes out singing at concerts once in a while. Rest of the time, it's money for jam. She goes out for a drive in the park every day at 5 and comes back to dinner at 6:30. Rest of the time's your own.
Oh, sharp manager, say.
No. But she's got a bloke watch that comes to see her all the time. He's a barrister. Nice gentleman. Mr. Geoffrey Norton is his name. Good-looking fella. Wouldn't be surprised to see him get sliced.
Sounds like an ass cushy job to me. Come on, Charlie. Let's get over to the house and see what's what. Much obliged to you, Matt Jump.
Well, good luck, matey.
Good night.
And thanks for the guineas.
What's our next move, Holmes?
Let's stroll back to Briony Lodge, shall we? I'm undecided whether to continue my investigations there or to try and find out something about Mr. Geoffrey Norton, the barrister. If he's just her lawyer and nothing else, it's more than likely that she's entrusted the photograph to his safekeeping.
Hello. There's a cab waiting outside Miss Adler's house.
Harry Watson. Maybe Mr. Norton's.
Here we are at the gate.
Yes. And here comes a man hurrying down the pathway. Quick. Hide this post. Listen.
Where to now, Mr. Norton?
Drive like the devil. First to Gross and Hankey's in Regent Street, and then to the Church of St. Monica in the Edgeware Road. Half a sovereign if you do it in 20 minutes.
Right you are, Mr. Norton. Hop in.
Try and signal the cab, Watson. We must follow him.
Here comes one. No, it isn't. It's a private carriage.
Miss Adler's, no doubt. Well, here she comes down the pathway. Back again behind the post, Watson.
Where to, Miss Adler?
The Church of St. Monica, John, and half a sovereign if you reach it in 20 minutes.
James, foot! Quick! You must get a cab and follow them.
Here comes a hansom. Cabby! Hi, cabby!
Have you both got enough money to take a cab?
Yes, half a sovereign for you, my man.
Right you are. Where to, Governor?
The Church of St. Monica on the Edgeway Road, and another half sovereign for you if you get us there in 20 minutes.
We now return to Act Two of Timely Audio's presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Doctor, again you broke off your story at the most exciting point. Did you and Sherlock Holmes reach that church inside the 20 minutes?
Yes, Mr. Bartell, we did, but the other carriages were there before us. Holmes went into the church after telling me to guard the outside. I must have waited for 10 minutes or more before Mr. Geoffrey Norton and Miss Adler came out. Spoke a few words to each other, and then left then in their separate conveyances. A moment later, Holmes, still dressed as a stable hand, came striding out of the church and down the steps towards me. He was obviously very excited.
Watson, have they left?
Yes, in separate cabs. I overheard him say that he was going back to his office, and she said, I shall drive out in the park at 5 o'clock as usual.
Splendid. And come on. We can return to Baker Street.
What happened inside the church, Holmes?
They were married.
Married?
Of course. The ceremony would have been illegal if performed afternoon. That accounted for their wild dash to the church. Jump into the cab, old fellow.
Where to now, Governor?
221B Baker Street.
Oh, so they got married, eh?
Yes, and it may amuse you to know that I acted as witness at the ceremony.
You did, but how did that happen?
Their own witness had failed to appear, and I was dragged into the breach. The bride gave me this sovereign as a memento. I think I'll wear it on my watch chain in memory of the occasion.
What an amazing situation. Things begin to look better for the king, don't they? Now that she's Mrs. Norton, the chances are that she won't want to expose his majesty after all.
I hope so, Watson, I hope so. But we can't afford to take any chances. I think the time is ripe for us to come to closer grips with the lady.
Well, Holmes, now that we've eaten, perhaps you'll tell me your plan.
With pleasure, my dear fellow. And while I'm so doing, I'll proceed with applying the makeup of my new disguise.
Another disguise? What's it to be this time?
I think the character and appearance of an amiable, simple-minded, nonconformist clergyman would be the most suited to my plan for entering Miss Adler's house.
You're going to try and enter, then?
I must, my dear fellow. I'm sure the photograph is there. Miss Adler, or rather, Mrs. Norton, who will return from her drive in the park at 6:30. We must be at Bryony Lodge to meet her.
And what then?
You must leave that to me. I've already made my arrangements. There is only one point on which I must insist. You must not interfere, come what may, you understand?
I'm to remain neutral.
Yes. There will be some small unpleasantness. Don't join in. It will end in my being conveyed into the house. As soon as I'm able to, I shall open one of the windows. You're to watch from the outside. When I raise my hand, you will throw an object that I shall give you through the window and at the same time cry fire. You follow me?
Entirely, but what am I to throw?
Oh, it's nothing very formidable. Here it is.
Huh. It's like a great big cigar.
Just
what is it?
An ordinary plumber's smoke rocket. Fit it with a cap at either end to make it self-lighting. Your task is confined to throwing it through the window. When you raise the cry of fire, it will be taken up by quite a number of people. You may then walk to the end of the street, and I'll rejoin you in 10 minutes. I hope I've made myself clear.
Perfectly.
Good. And now, old fellow, as soon as I've donned my clerical attire, let's be on our way. There's no time to be lost.
It is 6:30, Holmes. We've been pacing up and down in front of her house for half an hour now. I hope she does come back.
I'm sure she will.
There seem to be a lot of loafers hanging around her gate.
All part of my conspiracy, old chap. You'll see them play their parts in a few minutes.
You still think the photograph is inside the house?
Yes, it's most unlikely that she carries it about with her. Remember, the king told us it was a large frame picture. Also remember that she'd planned to use it within a few days. Must be where she can lay her hands on it. It must be inside her house.
But her house has been burgled twice.
They didn't know how to look.
How will you look?
I won't. I'll get her to show me.
Well, she'll refuse.
She won't be able to... Shh! Here comes the carriage now. Remember, Watson, carry out my orders to the letter.
You can trust me.
Good luck.
Blimey, here comes the Duchess of Piddlehaven. Yes. Let's put out a carpet. She might get her tootsies wet.
Oh, put a sock in it, Elfie.
Leave him alone. She's no better than she ought to be.
Please, let me through. I live here.
Well, ain't that nice? We'll all come in and have a cup of coffee.
Move out of the way, please, and let the lady through.
Mind your own business. Just because your collar's turned the wrong way round, you can't spoil our fun.
That's right, Eddie. Keep your nose out of it, Parsons.
Yes. Please don't fight about it.
No, I'll tell you what. Stop molesting the lady, please.
Do you? Then how would you like a biff on the nose?
Oh, he hit the poor man, and then he ran away, the coward. Is the clergyman badly hurt?
He hit his head, ma'am, as he fell. If you ask me, he's that bad. He's bleeding something terrible. Can we bring him in, ma'am? He can't lie here in the street.
Oh, why, of course. Bring him in.
Right you are, ma'am. Here, Bert.
Right, Ann.
Give us a hand.
Coo, poor fella. Did you see what happened to him, mister?
Yes, I saw, my good woman. A very convincing demonstration.
What you mean?
Weren't you paid by a certain gentleman for this performance?
Oh, you knows about it, too. You must be a friend of Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, I am.
Oh, nice gentleman. He give us 5 bob apiece for tonight's work. We ain't through yet, though. We've got to start yelling fire when somebody tells us.
I'm that somebody, my dear lady. There's Mr. Holmes now. He's inside the house.
Yes, he's opening a window.
Now he's raising his hand. That's my signal. Now to throw the rocket. Ah, there we are. Fire!
Fire! Fire! Fire!
Holmes, there you are. You have the photograph?
No, but I know where it is. She showed me as I told you she would.
Well, I'm still in the dark.
There's no mystery, old chap. When my accomplices started the row in the street, I had a little moist red paint in my hand. My good friend Alfred pretended to strike me. I clapped my hand to my head and fell down. It's an old trick.
Yes, I understand that, but how did my throwing the rocket help you?
It's all important, my dear fellow. When a woman thinks her house is on fire, her instinct is at once to rush for the thing that she values most. A married one grabs her baby. An unmarried one reaches for a jewel box. In this case, of course, it was the photograph.
Where was it?
In a recess in the living room, just above the right-hand bell pull. I caught a glimpse of it as she drew it out. When I made it known that the fire was a false alarm, she replaced the photograph. As soon as I was able to, I advised her that I was feeling well enough to leave.
You didn't take the photograph, then?
No, I felt that over-precipitance at this stage might ruin everything.
What do we do now?
Drive to the Langham Hotel and inform His Majesty of what has happened. Then return with him here. After that, my dear chap, the case will be ended.
This is Barney Lodge, Your Majesty.
Ash, I'm all impatience. You are certain the photograph will still be there, Mr. Holmes.
I have every reason to believe so, Your Majesty.
I must confess this is going to be something of an ordeal.
Then I suggest that you let me do the talking, Your Majesty. I think I know how to handle the lady.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes, I believe.
Yes, I am Mr. Holmes, but how did you know?
My mistress told me you would be likely to call. She's left for the continent with her husband.
You mean she's left England?
Never to return.
Then the papers and the photograph. Oh, all is lost.
We'll soon see. Follow me.
He said you'd be looking for something. I hope you find it.
This was the rope. There's a sliding panel behind it. Uh-huh. Here it is.
Is the photograph there, Mr. Holmes?
There is a photograph, Your Majesty, but it's a photograph of the lady alone. Here's a letter, and it's addressed to me.
What does it say, Holmes?
My dear Mr. Sherlock Holmes, you really did it very well. Until after the fire alarm, I had no suspicion. But then when I realized how I had betrayed myself, I began to think. I'd been warned,
that if the king employed an agent, he would certainly employ you. May I congratulate you on your disguise as a dear old clergyman?
Great Scott, he was much more clever than you thought, Holmes.
Yeah, yeah, go on. What else does it say?
And my husband and I both thought that the best recourse was flight. So you will find the nest empty. As to the photograph of the king and myself, His Majesty may rest in peace. Oh, thank goodness for that. I love and am loved by a better man than he. I leave another photograph, however, that he might care to possess. And I remain, dear Mr. Sherlock Holmes, very truly yours, Irene Norton, née Adler. What a woman, Watson. What a woman. What a magnificent woman. She fooled me completely. But, oh, I'm sorry, Your Majesty. I've been unable to bring your business to a more successful conclusion.
On the contrary, my dear sir, nothing could be more successful. I know that Irene's word is inviolate. The incriminating photograph is now as safe as if it were in the fire.
Well, I'm glad to hear Your Majesty say so.
I'm immensely indebted to you. Pray tell me in what way I can reward you. This beryl ring that I wear, I should be proud of.
Your Majesty has something that I should value even more highly.
You have but to name it.
This photograph, sir.
Irene's photograph? But certainly. However, you must let me give you something more substantial.
No, Your Majesty. This is something I shall treasure all my life. This and a golden sovereign I received from the lady's hand. They will remind me that I was once tricked by a woman. A woman that I shall never forget.
Gee, Doctor, what a woman that Mrs. Adler. Or should I say Mrs. Norton? Ah, that's the kind of woman I could really go for.
Yeah, I believe you could. Just between ourselves, you know, I could go for her myself.
She was intelligent.
She was rich.
And beautiful. That's the kind of woman you want sitting next to you in front of a cozy fire on a nippy fall night. Just the three of you.
The three of you?
Mm-hmm. You, she, and a glass of Petri Port.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure was written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and is an adaptation of the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, A Scandal in Bohemia. Music is by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invite you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studios. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And now for our weekly visit with the good Dr. Watson. I'm sure he's expecting us.
Come in. There you are, Mr. Bartell.
Good evening, Doctor. Oh, no, don't get up. You look much too comfortable.
Take off your overcoat and come and join me.
Well, I enjoyed your story of a scandal in Bohemia last week, Doctor, and tonight you promised us a sequel.
Yes, that's right, Mr. Bartell. A sequel that took place over 20 years afterwards, in 1909, to be exact. Sherlock Holmes was living on his Sussex bee farm. It was only in June, I remember, that I received a telegram from the great man asking me to come and spend a long weekend with him.
And I'm sure you needed no urging to accept the invitation.
None, Mr. Bartell, none at all. I haven't seen Holmes for some time, and this fact, combined with my rather indifferent health, found me on the Eastbourne train a few hours after receiving the telegram. A dog cart was at the station to meet me, And after a brisk drive across the downs, I found myself once more with my good friend. He looked somewhat older than when I'd last seen him, but as he spoke to me, I realized from the keenness of his voice and the sparkle in his eye that Sherlock Holmes would never really be old. After a while, our conversation lapsed into the comfortable silence that exists only between friends. And then, as the sun was setting, Holmes picked up his beloved violin and began to play some haunting melody. As he lay back, eyes half closed, his long, thin fingers caressing the instrument, a wave of nostalgia swept over me. I thought of the many years that we'd spent together and of the exciting adventures that we had shared during the old days in Baker Street. Beautiful. Quite beautiful.
Thank you, Watson. You look uncommonly wistful, dear chap. You thinking of the old days?
Yes, Holmes. I was.
So was I. Oh, well. Those were exciting times, but it's comforting to think that now we will not be disturbed by a jangling doorbell, followed shortly by some poor devil in trouble. Nowadays, my greatest excitements are connected with the segregation of the Queen Bee and the nighttime proclivities of Charles Augustus, my tomcat.
I still find it hard to think of you in retirement, Holmes. Do you ever consider returning to active practice?
Oh, I consider it occasionally, and then reject the idea. A man should work only up to the peak of his ability. I'm past mine.
Nonsense, Holmes. You're just as alert as ever you were.
Mentally, perhaps, but not physically.
Would you consider handling a small problem in England?
Oh, if it's a personal problem that affects you, my dear chap, you know I'll do anything I can.
Well, it's not exactly my problem, Holmes, but there was a charming young girl on the train. We got into conversation and...
You don't age it in a real chap. You're just as susceptible as ever.
No, Holmes, let me finish. She said that you knew her mother quite well.
Her mother? Come in. Oh, yes, Devers, what is it?
I'm sorry to disturb you, Mr. Holmes. Your man said I might come in. My master, Mr. Lytton Stanley, instructed me to deliver this note.
Oh, thank you.
He also instructed me to wait for a reply.
What confounded impudence. You tell master that there's no answer to this letter.
But he told me I must get a reply.
You may tell Mr. Lytton Stanley that I will instruct my solicitors to reply to his message in due course.
But, sir...
That's all, Devers. You may go.
Very good, sir.
Oh, what did the note say, Holmes?
Read it for yourself.
Keep your filthy bees where they belong. One of my guests was stung yesterday. If this happens again, I'll have the police run you out of this place. Good Lord, what an offensive letter.
The man himself is even more offensive. He's a retired manufacturer who thinks that his immense wealth entitles him to domineer over the local residents. Oh, but let's not spoil a nice sunny afternoon by discussing him. Please continue with the story of the young lady that you met on the train.
Yes, I'd like to. Poor little thing seems in dreadful trouble. I do wish you would help her.
You say that she told you her mother knew me?
Yes.
What's her name?
Norton. Irene Norton.
Norton? I don't seem to recall it. Oh, but of course! Where is the girl, Watson?
She's staying at the Red Lion in the village.
Then ring her on the telephone and ask her to come over here as fast as she can. Of course I'll help her.
I'm delighted, Holmes, but what made you change your mind so suddenly?
Is your memory so short that you can't remember Irene Adler? Surely you haven't forgotten that in the case you called a scandal in Bohemia, I was completely fooled by her.
Why, Julius, yes, of course. You always refer to her as the woman. But how does Irene Norton fit into the picture?
Irene Adler married a barrister named Geoffrey Norton. Tell Miss Norton to come at once, Watson. She is the daughter of the woman.
Mr. Holmes, I've heard so much about you from Mother. She says you're the cleverest man in England.
Your mother flatters me, my dear child. She herself was much more clever than I. In fact, yes. Did she ever tell you about the circumstances under which we met?
No, Mr. Holmes, though she did tell me that you were a witness when she and my father were married.
Yeah, very true, my dear, very true. Though the occasion was a little, shall we say, unusual. Look here. This golden sovereign I wear on my watch chain is a memento of that day. I also have a charming photograph of your mother.
You must have known her quite well.
How about telling Mr. Holmes about your troubles, my nephew?
Yes. Reminiscences are charming, but they can wait until we've dealt with your problems.
Mr. Holmes, I'm being blackmailed.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear it. By whom?
By a neighbor of yours, Mr. Lytton Stanley. Do you know him?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed, I do.
As a matter of fact, Mr. Holmes received a most offensive note from the gentleman less than an hour ago.
What hold does Mr. Stanley have over you, my dear?
He has some letters, some rather indiscreet letters of mine that I wrote to a friend of his last year.
How did he obtain these letters, Miss Norton?
He must have stolen them. I don't know how, but when I was staying at his house a few weeks ago, he told me that he had them and asked £5,000 for their return.
Oh, gracious me. And why should he consider your letters, even indiscreet letters, worth so large a sum?
I'm engaged to be married to Lord Weston's son. That awful man, Lytton Stanley, knows that if my fiancé saw the letters, the marriage would never take place.
They must be extremely compromising.
Oh, they aren't, really. But I was much younger when I wrote them. In fact, I was only 17, and I'm afraid they could easily be misconstrued.
Have you told your mother?
Oh, no, she'd never understand.
Hmm. She might surprise you on that score, I think. How about your father?
Daddy's a barrister. You can imagine how straight-laced he'd be about the whole thing. That's why I came to you, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, I see. You feel that I am not so, shall we say, straight-laced?
Of course you aren't. Mother's told me about you, and in any case, I've read Dr. Watson's stories.
Watson, my dear fellow, your stories will land me in serious trouble one of these days.
What are you suggesting Mr. Holmes can do for you, Miss Norton?
Get the letters back for me.
But how?
Steal them, of course.
Well, really, my dear, I hardly think you can...
No, my dear Watson, don't be shocked. Miss Norton is a forthright girl like her mother before her. It's most refreshing.
Mr. Holmes, you can't say you won't help me.
No, I don't think that I can say it. In any case, I have a slight personal score to settle with Mr. Lytton Stanley myself. He's rude and has no understanding of bees.
But how are you going to steal the letters?
That problem requires a little thought, old chap.
I can tell you how to do it, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, really? This is delightful, my dear. You explain the problem and also the way of solving it. How easy a detective's work might be if all clients were equally helpful. Tell me, what is your plan?
Tomorrow is a servant's half day off at Mr. Lytton Stanley's. He'll be alone there during the afternoon.
How do you know that fact?
My maid was keeping company, as they say, with Devers, the butler, when I was staying there a few weeks ago. She found out everything from him. My letters are kept in a filigree box in his desk.
With your enterprise, my dear, I'm surprised that you didn't try and open the desk yourself.
I did. But it's very sturdy and has a combination lock.
Oh.
However, I'm sure that you and Dr. Watson can think of some way of getting the letters, particularly if Mr. Lytton Stanley's alone in the house.
We shall do our best, Miss Norton.
Promise me one thing, though, both of you.
Oh, what's that?
Don't read the letters, will you? I'm really rather ashamed of writing them.
Oh, of course we won't, my dear child.
You're both so sweet to me. How can I thank you?
Thanks would be a little premature, but... You could do us a favor.
Of course. What is it?
Your mother had a beautiful voice, I recall. I wonder if you inherit her talent.
I do sing, though I've never done so professionally, like mother.
And I've never played the violin professionally, but perhaps between us we could give Watson a little concert.
That's a delightful idea. We can't do anything until tomorrow anyway.
What would you like to sing?
Songs my mother taught me.
Really, remarkably appropriate.
In the days long vanished, seldom from her eyes.
Charming. Tonight, music, and tomorrow, a touch of daylight robbery.
Dear old Watson, your disguise is really excellent.
Oh, I must confess I'm a little apprehensive.
Hi, old chap. There's no need to be, I assure you. You, as Dr. Hamish, and I, as the Reverend Appleby, are calling on Mr. Lytton Stanley ostensibly in search of a contribution for my charity hospital that you are in charge of. What could be simpler?
Well, what made you decide on the role of a clergyman?
It should simplify our entrance into the house. Though I must confess that a rare touch of sentiment prompted the choice of my disguise.
How does sentiment enter into it?
Oh, surely you remember that it was in the role of a simple-minded nonconformist clergyman that I once attempted to deceive Miss Norton's mother?
That's right. I'd forgotten. That woman really fascinates you, doesn't
she? She does, old chap. Irene Adler was one woman I've always regarded with unbounded admiration, even though she was a criminal. But the map of this. Come on, old fellow. Are you ready?
Yes.
You have the equipment I mentioned to you?
In my pocket?
Let's be off, old chap. Let's be off. Home, or the devil doesn't he answer the door?
Come, 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 my dear Reverend Appleby. For a parson, your language is hardly appropriate.
I'm sorry, Dr. Hamish. Here comes someone.
Yes?
Mr. Lytton Stanley?
That's my name.
Mine is Appleby, and this is my friend, Dr. Hamish.
I'm proud to meet you, sir. I've heard a great deal about you.
What can I do for you?
If we could come in for a moment, I'll explain our mission.
Very well. Come into the study.
We're raising a subscription list for a charity hospital at Paddlewaite, just across the Downs. You're a prominent resident here, and we thought that you'd like to donate a few guineas.
I'm really not very interested. I've given as much to charity this year as I can afford.
Well, it's a fine cause, sir. I'm giving my medical services 3 days a week, and the Reverend Appleby is donating his services, too.
Who else has contributed to this fund?
All your neighbors, sir. We just came from the bee farm over the Downs. The owner, Mr. Holmes, gave us a check for 5 guineas.
Mm. Holmes gave you 5 guineas, did he?
Aye, a very nice gentleman, Mr. Holmes. We're proposing to name a ward in the hospital after him.
Is this list of subscribers going to be published in the paper?
Oh, yes, Mr. Lytton Stanley.
I'll give you 10 guineas.
10 guineas?
Oh, thank you, sir.
Very kind of you, sir, I'm sure.
Aye, I'll get my checkbook. It's in this desk.
Good, Watson. The chloroform.
Right. Now, who do I make this check payable to?
Hold him still, Holmes. Hold him still.
Very neat, Watson.
Chloroform doesn't take long, does it?
Hold it, little old fellow. He's lying over the desk. That's it.
Is the filigree box in there?
Uh-huh. Here it is.
Splendid. Holmes, don't open it. You promised that you wouldn't.
I just wish to make sure that...
Make sure... Who was there, Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Who there?
Oh, no, don't move. I have a revolver, and don't turn round. Place the box on the table, Mr. Holmes. And put your hands up, gentlemen, both of you. That's right.
I know that voice. It's Devers, the butler.
Quite correct, sir.
Well, Devers, you needn't point a revolver at us. Is your master injured?
I'm not in the least interested in my master's health, Dr. Watson. In fact, if he were dead, I should be delighted.
And what are you up to, Devers?
I'm taking advantage of a situation, sir. I've been trying to open that desk for weeks. After such kindness on your part, sir, I hate to seem ungracious, but I'm dreadfully afraid I shall have to kill you. To kill both of you.
We now return to Act Two of Timely Audio's presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Well, Doctor, that was a fine place to break off your story, with the butler pointing a gun at your backs and you and Sherlock Holmes with your hands above your heads. What happened next? I know at least you didn't get killed, or you wouldn't be sitting here in California tonight telling me the story.
Elementary, my dear Mr. Bartell, but supposing I take you back in the story to the point where I left off.
Well, all right then. Take me back, Doctor. Take me back.
Very well. We stood there, Holmes and I, our hands above our heads. As Devers said...
Grateful I am that you opened the desk for me. After such kindness on your part, sir, I hate to seem ungracious, but I'm dreadfully afraid I'm going to have to kill you both.
Devers, I dislike to appear stupid at such a melodramatic moment, but why is it necessary to kill us?
For months, I have been waiting for an opportunity to steal the Kitman Jar Emerald, and now you have done it for me, sir, and presented me with a perfect alibi.
The Kitman Jar Emerald?
Oh, come now, Mr. Holmes, you know the treasures in this house as well as I do. Apart from the emerald, there's a superb Cellini that would fetch a fine price in the right market.
We aren't here after any valuables, my good man.
Please don't call me your good man, Dr. Watson. It's patronizing and untrue. In any case, sir, whether you were here after the valuables or not makes no difference. I've caught you both red-handed. You're completely in my power, gentlemen.
You're going to steal the treasures, I suppose, and then pretend that we were responsible.
Exactly, sir. Mm-hmm. I shall kill you both, secrete what objects appeal to me, and when my master regains consciousness, I shall explain that I found 3 men burgling the house, that I killed 2 of them while the 3rd got away with the loot. Who will be able to doubt my word? To be regarded as a hero. I might even have my salary raised.
Now, Watson, I'm afraid this is the end, old chap.
What a sordid way to die. Shot the back like a coward.
Adivas. At least do us the courtesy of allowing us to face the firing squad, will you?
Very well, gentlemen. Turn round. But don't try any tricks.
One last request.
What is it, sir?
I'm beaten, and I admit it. I'm getting old, but in my heyday, I've crossed swords with some of the greatest criminals in Europe. My life has been attempted many times, but I've always escaped. If this is to be my swan song, at least give me the privilege of shaking the hand of a man who has at last bested me.
Well, sir, I feel that I'm stepping a little out of my station, but I suppose the situation is unusual. I hope you don't object to the left hand, sir. I'll keep the revolver in my right.
Very well, Devers. There you are.
Goodbye, Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Goodbye, Devers, and my congratulations for... My congratulations for being a fool.
Well done, Holmes.
Maybe getting old, Watson, but I've not lost my skill at bloody too.
He went over your shoulder in a flash. Fortunately, the bullet went wide.
How is he, Watson? Struck the desk as he fell.
Yes, he gashed his head. It's not serious. He'll be unconscious for a while.
Good, but I think we'll take the precaution of closing this desk drawer. I don't want him to be exposed to further temptation when he comes to. There we are.
Well, shouldn't we get into touch with the police, Holmes?
Police? Great Scott, no, old fellow. After all, we're burglars and we're in disguise. Two facts that would be hard to explain satisfactorily, no? We must get back to the bee farm as soon as possible.
Yes, I suppose you're right. Miss Norton will be waiting for us there, and we'll tell her what happened. Poor girl, I'm afraid she's in for something of a shock.
Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, I'm so glad to see you back again. Did you get the filigree box?
Yes, Miss Norton, here it is.
But, Holmes, I didn't know that you...
Shh, Watson. Why not open it, Miss Norton?
Well, I...
Open it, my dear. There may not be love letters inside it, but there's a note.
Oh.
Why don't you read it to us?
Let this be a warning, Miss Norton. Crime does not pay. If you don't believe me, ask your mother. Sincerely, Sherlock Holmes. Mr. Holmes, you knew my secret all the time.
Not all the time, but I realized it as soon as I'd opened the filigree box.
What on earth are you talking about?
Miss Norton was under the impression that she could use me as a cat's paw, as a dupe to commit a burglary for her.
I still don't understand, Holmes.
You will remember she asked us to promise not to open the box.
Yes, but you did, sir, just before the fellow held us up with a revolver. What was inside the box?
An impressive green stone which I knew to be the Kitmanjar emerald.
But where's the emerald now?
I slipped it back into Mr. Lytton Stanley's desk and locked it. Brought the box here because I wanted to see your expression, Miss Norton, as you opened it.
Great Scott, and I thought you were a poor little thing in trouble. Shocking.
You have to save yourself, young lady.
But I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Holmes, terribly sorry. It seemed like a wildly exciting idea, but I didn't really mean to steal it.
No, of course not. No, of course you didn't. You meant me to steal it for you. Miss Norton, I'm convinced you knew that your mother once outwitted me, and you presumed to think that you could do the same. I should turn you over to the police.
Please don't, Mr. Holmes. You can't do that.
I certainly could. But I'm not going to, for two reasons. First, you're young and impressionable, and this may teach you a lesson. And in the second place, I have a strange admiration for your mother. But I warn you, Miss Norton, that you have had a narrow escape. A very narrow escape.
Mr. Holmes, before I go, there's one favor I want to ask you.
Really? What is it?
Could I keep this filigree box with your note inside it? It would be a reminder all my life of how we met.
What do you say, Watson?
Well, it isn't your box to give, Holmes.
That's true, old fellow. That's quite true. But I fail to see how we can return it now without disclosing our own share in the attempted robbery. In any case, I don't like Mr. Lytton Stanley. I think we might indulge in a little petty larceny without feeling too guilty. Very well, Miss Norton. You may keep the box.
I shall always treasure it. Thank you. Goodbye, Dr. Watson. Don't think too badly of me.
Goodbye.
Good night, Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
You know, Holmes, I must say you were surprisingly lenient with that girl. Do you suppose her mother put her up to the whole thing?
That possibility had occurred to me, old fellow. And yet I have a feeling that... Come in. Door's open.
Were you expecting anyone?
No.
Good Scott, it's Lytton Stanley.
Good evening, sir. This is an unexpected honor.
Sherlock Holmes, we haven't been the best of friends, I know. But you've got to help me now. I'm in serious trouble.
Oh, indeed, sir. Won't you sit down? This is my friend, Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
And now, sir... What is your trouble?
I've been robbed, Holmes.
Robbed? What was stolen?
Well, my greatest treasure, the Kitmanjar emeralds removed from his case and then mysteriously returned loose in my desk afterwards. But there's a priceless Cellini missing.
Have you any idea who the burglars might be?
Oh, it was a gang, I'm sure of that. A couple disguised as a clergyman and a doctor came into the house on the pretext of raising money for some hospital. And they overpowered me with chloroform.
Oh, dear me, how very unpleasant for you.
Yes, well, when I came to, I found my butler, Devers, lying beside me in a pool of blood. The brave fellow had wrestled with the thieves, but they got away. And he's in the hospital now. Holmes, you've got to help me.
The Kitmanjar emerald was returned, you say, but a Cellini is missing.
Yes. It's an exquisite filigree box in which I'd kept the emerald.
A filigree box?
Yes, it's a genuine Cellini. It's worth several thousand pounds. Holmes, you must help me solve this business.
I'm sorry, Mr. Lytton Stanley, but I'm afraid I can't help you. I've retired. Yes, and I intend to remain in retirement. Good night, sir.
Oh, but I'll pay you any fee within reason.
My decision is final, sir. Good night.
Oh, I might have known I wouldn't get any help from you.
Holmes, she fooled you again.
Yes, the little devil. She knew that box was a Cellini all the time.
You don't seem very angry with her, old
man. I should be, but I'm not. What splendid audacity. What a superb nerve the child has.
But you must get the box back from her.
I shall, Watson. I shall. Or rather, I shall persuade Devers to do it for me. As the price of our silence.
But how can he get it back?
Remember that he walks out with Miss Norton's maid. I'm certain that when he explains his predicament, he can prevail upon her to steal the box from her mistress so that it may be returned to its rightful owner.
That's a good idea. By George, Holmes, Miss Norton's a chip off the old block, all right?
Yes, Watson, she is, and it makes me wonder.
What about?
I wonder, my dear chap, how long I can remain in retirement. Such a worthy antagonist at large, it's a challenge. It's an irresistible challenge.
You know, Dr. Watson, I just can't get over the way you and Mr. Holmes let that girl, Irene, was that her name, pull the wool over your eyes. Boy, she really twisted you around her little finger.
Well, Mr. Bartell, I don't like to make extremely positive statements, but I'm sure that if you were in my shoes, Irene would not only have twisted you around her little finger, but she'd have had you rolling about in hoops and standing on your head.
You mean she was that beautiful?
Mr. Bartell, she was so beautiful that she'd make you forget all about Petri wine.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure was written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, A Scandal in Bohemia. Music is by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. Basil Rathbone's new Columbia record album, Robin Hood, is now available at your music store. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studios. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family.
You've been listening to the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Copyright 2020 by Timely Audio. All rights reserved.